one right here is for the people.
Okay, this is podcast 21. When people hear the word philosophy, a lot of people will immediately shut off, or they'll be very excited to have that conversation with you. I guess what I wanted to focus on today is, you know, what does actually philosophy mean and why it's important and how it's affected my life personally in the past 15 years. The actual word philosophy, I checked out the wiki meaning. It literally means love of wisdom. So interpret that how you will, but I thought it was a very short and succinct, you know, excellent way of explaining what it is, because for me that has been my journey, I guess, ever since I got introduced to these ideas. I used to think of philosophy as a boring subject when I came to choose my A-level subjects. You know, I totally bypassed philosophy, you know, just as I would geography or history. At that time, I just thought it was a subject like any other. When I really started to understand the, you know, what it actually meant and the vastness of it, you know, and for someone to not actually take the time to give it some kind of contemplation, you know, it is almost a waste of the use of the brain. I came across a really cool YouTube page called Total Philosophy. You know, it had really clever short videos and it explained the works of these great philosophers with these homemade, you know, edited videos, which made it very interesting and very easy to pick up some of the big ideas. I saw the one on Descartes. The video was entitled Why He Said I Think Therefore I Am. You can find this all on the Total Philosophy. You just type that into Facebook or in YouTube and you'll get all the videos there. But I thought it was a great way to introduce complex and amazing ideas in a very easy way. You know, just as this podcast is one medium of where we try and take some of these important ideas and just have a conversation amongst friends. So that video, 35,000 hits approximately, and based on all the really good stuff, the comments that I've seen on the bottom of the YouTube videos, you know, people are really liking this. Mm. And that's based on, you know, what I saw in my experience as well. So Philip, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem, it's a pleasure.
Yeah,
thanks for having me.
No problem at all. It's really nice to see you're studying for your A-level exams right now, right?
Yes, that is correct.
So for, you know, someone of your age and with your fellow your presenter too, as we call him.
Yeah.
You took the initiative to produce this content. You know, you made the YouTube, you got your YouTube videos, you got your Facebook page, and, you know, it looks very professional. And
thank you.
And it really is an interesting and a good way for, you know, if you want to find out a bit about these big philosophers, then, you know, it's an excellent way to do that. We also have a maths teacher, Anne Newen, who are a regular co-host here tonight.
Hello, Anne.
Hello. Yeah, very impressed with the videos. And well done on the 35,000 hits.
Almost. Yeah.
Did you expect... When did you start the videos? How long has it been up and running?
Well, it's almost a year ago now.
Year.
It was just after I finished my AS exams.
Okay.
I started, so I came up with the idea before that,
yeah,
while revising for my philosophy AS.
Okay.
And I was like, there's no philosophy videos out here. I think that, you know, there should be videos that I can learn from.
Yeah.
But I, of course, couldn't make them at the time because I had commitments in my exams.
Yeah,
and you probably can tell now that the videos have declined a bit. Now I have other commitments to my A2. But yeah, as soon as those AS exams finished, I got on and made the videos. Mm. So I am surprised at the vast number of people who have come to it, really.
Yeah, so what was your motivation and how did this begin? And by
Like I said, it was when I started AS philosophy, I sort of picked it out of the blue. And I really fell in love with the subject and enjoyed it. It's sort of answering questions that everyone asks and that I think everyone wants the answer to. Now, I sort of, when doing this philosophy can be a very hard subject to grasp. And it's sort of a thing that when you get the key ideas and key concepts, it becomes very easy to grasp. It's sort of, once you get past that first stepping stone, you can start to, you know, you've got the first concepts, you've got the building blocks, and you can start to expand. So I sort of wanted to build something that could let people understand philosophy easily, which wasn't out there at the time. I mean, I sort of went across YouTube and couldn't find any videos really that did that, gave you philosophy for free, that was bite-sized, that's easy to understand for people. So I wanted to create some content that sort of provided philosophical videos to people for free, basically, in short, bite-sized concepts that people can understand. And maybe they can take that home to their friends and family and stuff and sort of go, hey, I learned about Descartes, or I learned about John Locke or something. And go and talk about philosophy. And that's what I really want people to do. And on top of that, I think it's, as well as just being for people who are interested in philosophy, it is for those studying A-level as well, who sort of struggling with course maybe, and just need something little to help them understand the key concepts so they can expand it into arguments and put it down in their essays.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I said, the hits speak for itself. The videos are... I thought they were brilliant, didn't we? We didn't realise it was, you know, done by such a young person, which is a compliment, you know, that you're studying it. And have you shown your teachers? Being a teacher myself, I would have been very impressed, by the way. Have you shown your teachers?
No, I have not shown my teacher. Let's say crazy my teacher.
Okay. I think that's very impressive. I know that. Yeah, teaching maths, they've got... I don't know if you're aware, there's a website called Exam Solutions, and they do sort of very detailed lectures on the A-level syllabus. And, even before watching your videos on the philosophy, I thought, what a great way to share knowledge. You know, we're in the 21st century, and something like philosophy where it's, you don't come across it every day. It's quite difficult to grasp some of the concepts and to put it in bite-sized chunks like that, because people's attention nowadays, I think, you know, unless it's short and sharp and simple and entertaining, which you have done with you know, the animation, etc., you wouldn't necessarily sort of give it any more time. So.
It's a brilliant way, explain to someone. So we talked about philosophy now, and as a listener, you know, like I said, if you're not familiar with philosophy, you might have even just switched off already. So you know, let's give a good example, Descartes. So Philip, explain to someone who doesn't know about his work and his contribution to the way it shaped, as I said, our world today. You know, how would you go about? I mean, if you can, in a few words, explain that.
I think I'd first like to start by sort of defining philosophy. I think a lot of people see philosophy as a dreamy subject where you sort of sit in an armchair by the fire, stroking your beard, thinking about random questions and stuff, and sort of a subject that has no real answer to it, just questions, questions, questions. But I don't think that is the case. I mean, philosophy for me is a search of truth and a search of knowledge. And these questions are very important, from whether, you know, the existence of God, to why should we be moral, to why should we be governed. These questions are important, and they do, I believe, have objective answers to. I know there are some who may argue that there's no answers at all, but we'll leave them out of the question for now. But I think, so with these philosophy is like finding the answer, finding the truth. It's not just about dreaming, but it's sort of a search for knowledge that you can build upon and sort of get to somewhere where you say, well, I think this is true and this is obviously rubbish. Because by using philosophy, you can sort of narrow down, let's say, your options. While you may not find the true answer straight away, you can sort of remove that is rubbish, and philosophy can show what is not needed. So when you get to Descartes, I think what he tries to attempt to do is show that your thinking with his "I think, therefore I am." And he goes on to build... saying, because he says, since he is thinking, he therefore must exist. But I'm not sure how much you want to go into that.
The cogito ergo sum, je pense, donc je suis, and I think, therefore I am. It's very easy to spit that out. It was actually Anne that introduced it to me, you know, all those years ago, and explained, and, you know, like your video does about the evil demon. If you can go into that a little bit more.
Oh, I've got some memories, dude. Right. yeah, it was 10 months ago when I made that video. But yeah, I think I know it. So, yeah, basically Descartes wanted to prove that he wanted to prove that he exists. And so he sort of said, what can I do to prove that I exist? So he said, first I must move everything off the table of like what I know. He says, so he imagines there's an evil demon who's tricking him of absolutely everything he knows. So everything he thinks he knows, everything he sees, this evil demon is tricking him, making him think of something else. So he goes, what can I do to make, you know, be sure of things? Can I be certain of my existence? So he sort of sits down and starts pondering over what can I be certain of? And he sort of says, well, I'm thinking, I am having thoughts. The demon can't obviously be deceiving me that I'm having thoughts, even if those thoughts are all wrong. All the thoughts I'm having are of deceptions. I'm still having thoughts. So he goes, well, okay, I'm definitely having thoughts. That's one thing I could be certain of. So he sort of adds this to his, what he calls table of knowledge, let's say, of certainty, what he can be certain of. So from here, he expands on to say, well, I can be certain that I am thinking, but so my thoughts have to come from somewhere. So he then goes, okay, if these thoughts have to come from somewhere, I must exist. Mm. You know, he goes on from here to say, to establish dualism. So he says, well, since I can establish that I exist before I have proved that I have a body, it must mean that existence is separate from the body. So he said, I have a soul. And
so just to stop you there, I think,
yeah,
you know,
going on to
very well summarized.
Very well summarized, but I think a good analogy of that, well, a good example is the movie The Matrix, you know, in its simplest form. If you're familiar with the movie, he wakes up one day to discover that all his perceptions are wrong. You know, yeah. Maybe the way that you look, the fact that you think that you have a mother, that you have an arm or you have an eye or your whole concept of time or everything, it's completely false. So it's very difficult to think, well, what is it that I can be certain of? And the way that Nigel Warburton, you know, a philosopher at explaining, again, you know, big complex ideas on a very easy to understand level, he uses the analogy of a basket full of apples, whereby he would only place an apple apple inside if it was, you know, beyond any doubt. And he wasn't able to do this with anything. You know, he discovered that it would be his own existence. You know, if someone is tricking me to think that this is my real life, then I must exist to be tricked.
I think when he set out the whole cogito and the whole hyperbolic doubt, it was, I mean, we were talking the other day, weren't we, about the title of the discourse, you know, known as the discourse or method, but, that, you know, the full title was a discourse on the method of rightly conducting one's reason and seeking truth in the sciences. And it was actually the preface to a larger work called Le Monde, or The World. And I think his idea, and this is something that's quite surprising to me, that how much credit or how little known Descartes is outside of the philosophical circles or mathematics, where given the importance of his role in the Enlightenment. You know, Descartes' intention initially, I think, was to say, okay, you know, how can I arrive at certain knowledge, as you've touched upon, you know, how can I arrive at truth? And so he dismantles what he knows, and therefore our senses can deceive us. And as you know, as you said, you know, taking out all the apples, and what is the method by which I could arrive at certainty? And as a result, as a consequence of that, you know, for those who are not aware, he greatly influenced Isaac Newton and the Enlightenment. So we're looking at if you read up a little about Descartes, regarded as the father of the Enlightenment, and that period in human history where we've progressed so much as a result of his work. And I think, you know, and we were saying this the other day, weren't we, about, you know, you talk to any schoolboy or anyone, I know that Newton, for example, was voted the greatest Briton. I think he took over from Churchill. So he's voted the greatest Briton. Descartes, I went to the Louvre and just to find that painting of Descartes.
Sorry, that's the Louvre.
I went to the Louvre, innit? And it was like hidden in some room behind the door. And yeah, it's to me, he's sort of, I don't know, in the public domain, he's sort of very much ignored for what he's done, you know, to lay the foundations of science. I mean, that is not a small task for one man.
All right, explain. Lay the foundation of science.
Well,
explain.
He realised that this, you know, the mathematics. I mean, obviously, he was a famous mathematician, a great mathematician, and he looked at, you know, the certainty that comes with mathematical knowledge. But at the time, we take science for granted now as what scientists does, and it's just a method that we're all very familiar with. You know, experimental data, empirical observations, and using the language of mathematics in understanding the natural world. But it was Descartes who actually first said that in his discourse, that he was surprised that, you know, there was nothing greater built on such solid foundations. And you could see what Newton then did with that. You know, when he wrote the Principia, it was all mathematical physics. So it was Descartes who first expounded the idea that we need to use mathematics as the language of science. And we all, as 21st century people, just take that for granted. Of course, you know, I mean, I don't know quantum mechanics. So when I use that word, you know, or, you know, relativity, but I do know that it's written with the language of mathematics. But prior to that, it was, you know, science was, you know, what was science? You know, he was, if you like, you know, to quote John Cottingham, you know, one of the architects of science as we know it today. And I think, you know, and again, in the science classrooms, when is that ever shared to the students? You know, that this method of inquiry, of trying to understand nature, had its roots, its beginnings, you know, from a lone Frenchman sitting there trying to understand the world in which we live.
Yeah, Frenchman, so great. They renamed the city that he was born in, La Haye.
La Haye, yeah, named after La Haye Descartes.
La Haye Descartes.
Yeah.
You know, who are your favourite philosophers, Philip?
Oh, my favourite philosophers. I quite like Plato, because when I'm reading his stuff, you sort of, you know, reading through the book, and you sort of think of a criticism or think of something, and you turn the next page, and hey, Plato has answered it or talks about it. I think his style of writing is quite good in that sense. I quite like Kierkegaard, although I don't know an awful lot about him yet. I mean, I've taken a brief look at him and quite like him. I mean, I wouldn't say I have a total favourite philosopher.
Well, what about, tell us a bit more about the recent interview that you did. You know, I think that's made one of the main features on your pages. It's with Richard Swinburne.
Oh, yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, Richard Swinburne is a famous, let's say, famous theologian or philosopher of religion. And what he does is he's written a lot on dualism and the soul and religion, really, which I think is a big question, whether you're atheist, theist, or whatever, really. That you ask these questions about, do we have a soul? Does God exist?
Yep.
These questions cannot be ignored, whether or not they're true or false. So I think going and interviewing him was really good, because he can really sort of express his works on dualism, which I think is quite good. I think he offers some good arguments and some not so good arguments, but I think.
And this idea of dualism. That's, you know, that's a word that a lot of people are not familiar with. I'm still not too sure about the meaning.
I think the idea that you're talking about the Cartesian dualism, or just the mind-body distinction, or
yes, dualism is the idea that the soul and the body are separate, two separate beings, really.
So not the mind and the body, but the soul and the body.
Yeah, soul and the body.
Okay,
you would say. So you'd say there's a soul that's distinct from the body, really, or that. I'm not so sure. I think he would probably say that the mind has a bit more, is a bit more physical than the soul.
Okay.
Than Descartes would say. Mm. But, yeah, he definitely says there's a distinction between the two. Mm. Goes on to prove that through his certain methods. You probably have to watch the interview to get it in whole.
It says here, for the last 50 years, has been an influential proponent of philosophical arguments for the existence of God. And I find that really quite interesting, because if you go online, you'll see a lot of debates and a lot of philosophical conversations about why God does not exist. But, you know, it's very rare that I've come across something where they, you know, where someone is arguing for the existence of God.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, it's just those that believe in that religion are usually the people that would do the defending of it and the arguing for it.
Mm.
You know, but to have it on a philosophical level as well is, you know, very interesting.
And, you know, just like as an agnostic, say, where you think, okay, I'm not sure, and I'd like to ask someone, and then you come across, say, Richard Swinburne, who has obviously done his fair share of studying and reading, and he believes in God and argues for the existence of God. And we were saying that you look at Bertrand Russell, who, you know, great 20th century figure in the history of philosophy and mathematics, who's an atheist. And then I mentioned another professor. I was watching the debate between Richard Dawkins and Professor John Lennox. So, and Professor John Lennox is a mathematician at Oxford University who's a Christian, and they were arguing, you know, obviously Richard Dawkins was saying, he's a well-known atheist. I'm sure everyone's heard of him. And so if you're looking to rely on sort of study to answer those questions, clearly you can't use the idea that you could spend years of studying and come to a conclusion through your studies, even because, you know, either way, you've got sort of renowned academics that have disagreed on this question. So it makes it as you said, I think it's such a fundamental question, because we live in a world where through religion people conduct their lives. I mean, their lives are centered around their philosophical beliefs on the existence of God.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a very important question to ask.
Yeah, I think it is a important question. The thing is, too many people these days sort of disregard religion as an argument that's not backed by science, not backed by philosophy, not backed by logic, and sort of jump on the atheism bandwagon. Yeah. Sort of say, oh, this is backed by philosophy, this is backed by science. And I think that is wrong. People these days sort of don't want to engage in theosophical thought and philosophy and theology.
Mm.
I think more people need to take on board sort of religion, really. I'm not saying it's true, I'm not saying they should accept it's true, but there's an argument to be had, and they do have argument, and there is philosophy behind it. It's been going on for thousands and thousands of years, and all through these thousand years there's been people who say religion is dead, religion has finished, and it hasn't. So there are theosophical arguments there to be made, and I think people need to explore those. Too often people say, no, I'm not going to get involved in this. It's not a question to be answered. It's not a question to be asked. When there is, religion and philosophy should definitely be considered.
Yeah.
Now, whether what conclusions people come to that is up to them, and hopefully if they explore it deep enough, they'll come to the right conclusion and the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think people should disregard it, really, as much as they do.
And also, just to change it a little bit, about sort of you coming across philosophy, so was it by chance you decided to study philosophy?
Yeah, totally by chance.
And
I had no idea. I mean, I always liked thinking and debating, really. And that's probably what got me on. I've always been a debater. So I went, you know, this philosophy seems good. It looks good. I'll just pick it. And I loved it, really. It was interesting.
I mean, I think we all, in some sense, engage in some sort, and whether it's not so much formal sort of philosophical discourse or discussion, but we all sort of have a, you know, whether it's just an informal when you think about life, is that not in a way philosophizing when you say, well, if you look at young people, and it's very, very refreshing to see, you know, to know of someone who's doing so well to share these ideas. But if you look at young people your age, say teenagers, you know, and this is not to knock the teenagers because I teach them and, you know, got some great teenagers like yourself and others. But certainly when I was a teenager and around my circle of friends, it was the pursuit of pleasure. That was the philosophy of life. There was nothing more than, forgive me, friends, for saying, but chasing women and looking good and all the sort of, you know, vanity. And in a sense, that reflected their philosophy. It was, well, for me, life is about pleasure. And that is the meaning. And therefore, I will, you know, live my life around that. And that, in a sense, I mean, that's a very, I mean, again, then when you read philosophy and you hear that Aristotle, you know, over 2,000 years ago had dismissed pleasure, so, you know, as happiness, as the root to happiness, you know, very early on in his writings. So, but, you know, so that had already been addressed. And just thinking back at when I was a young man, sort of having informal discussions or conversations with my mates, and it was always, and I hate to publicly say this, but it was very often about, you know, women and trying to pull. And I think that and understandable, because that's nature, isn't it? But a lot of young men, or football, or those things, and
or games,
or
music, or, you know, something that everyone can relate to.
Yeah, I think Harry Enfield summarized it quite well with his Kevin and Perry stretch. You know, he said when he looked back at his days, you know, remembering his teens, he was always having a boner, always having a. So it was like, it's quite funny that we can all in some sense relate to that. You know, that's why it's worked so well. The whole, and I think that's true. That
no, I remember those times as well. You know, and it's, you know, a lot has changed since then, but, you know, I guess within a group of friends, there are people that you can really relate to, and that share the passion of discussing, you know, philosophy. And
well, I think it's valuable whether you study it formally, like Philip intends to, which I think is a great thing to do. But I mean, I was watching a video by a guy called Jules Evans, who he did a TED talk on how philosophy saved my life. Because he went through a period of depression and sadness, and it was through the reading of philosophy that he came out of it. And I was also mentioning CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and the founder of it was influenced by the Stoic philosophers on how it's not things in themselves, but our judgment of things that are good or bad. And through that, you know, we've developed a very effective form of therapy. So there's such value, and again, back to Descartes, if you want to question the value of philosophy, we can say, well, if we look at science, you know, it was through, again, questioning our fundamental assumptions about the world that we have come at this, at the knowledge that our understanding of the natural world.
Was he not only a philosopher, but a mathematician, astrologer, Descartes.
Yeah, well, he was a very famous.
So yeah, give us a bit of the, you know, what else, well, we all that know people wouldn't really associate Descartes with.
I think the only the Cartesian coordinates, so the x y axis was his, or analytic geometry. So it was basically geometry and algebra. So we could say have a circle, and we have an equation of a circle, and how we can relate the algebraic with the geometric. So it was, you know, he did a lot more than that.
All our coordinates to let's
so, yeah, so what we say today, the x y axis, known as the Cartesian coordinates, was named after you know, Descartes. His Latin name was Cartesius, or however you say it. So so that contribution to it, and of course I think Newton, with, I mean, this sounds a bit technical, but anyone who's doing A level maths would know calculus, and it's basically, for those who don't, it's the most powerful sort of discovery. They say, I mean, to quote a book I read on calculus, it's the greatest computational achievement in human history, was what they said, and that Newton built his work on Descartes. So again, just in a strictly mathematical sense, his contribution. I mean, that alone, I think.
You know, like the butterfly effect, because that's seriously just like.
Oh yeah, that alone. You know, just one contribution, but you know, the father of modern philosophy, the father of the Enlightenment, the father of modern mathematics. I mean, what an achievement for one man to have done in a lifetime, and not be known.
Yeah, and we talk about it so passionately because, you know, we laugh about it a lot. But for the past 15 years, you know, all our conversations would eventually end up somewhere around there.
Yeah, and I think also the value of, I mean, back to the title, Discourse on the Method of Rightly Conducting One's Reason. Just to even question your thinking. And I think
so
about...
explain what it means.
Well, it's him questioning what I know, how can I know what I know, you know. So epistemology, I suppose, is the term for the theory of knowledge. And I think Descartes puts that at the centre of Western philosophy. And I think you mentioned that in your videos, didn't you? You know, much of subsequent philosophy was a response to his writings. So you can, I mean, something so blows, you know, to think what one man can achieve. But so yeah, he's put that, you know, the theory of knowledge at the centre of Western philosophy subsequently.
You seem to have a great adoration for Descartes. From hearing you seem very pleased of him.
Yeah.
It's evident that you obviously like him. Yeah. What do you think of his problems?
Oh, the arguments against...
yeah.
I think
convincing?
I was watching an interview with Bernard Williams, who'd spent, I think, 20 years writing... a book on Descartes, and I think, and the interviewer was saying that now, I mean, since then, there's been many criticisms of all aspects of his philosophy, but the questions that he raised were of such, you know, fundamental importance. But I think that, you know, many of the philosophers that have come since have regarded him as very much wrong. His physics, his epistemology, I mean, so although an admirer, I think that why he's not so famous, I suppose, in physics is because Newton I think it's his theory of vortex, Descartes' theory, if I recall, it was, so his physics was wrong, basically. There was no value in it, apart from a historical perspective.
Yeah.
So it's been superseded by subsequent generations. But yeah, I mean, as an agnostic, or I mean, are you a theist? Are you a believer?
Yeah, I'm a theist.
Okay. Are you a Christian?
Yes, I'm Christian, thank you very much.
Yeah. So I'm not sure myself, so you've sort of found, which is good. I mean, I'm sort of still searching, I suppose. And one criticism was, well, for me, I mean, this, I suppose for our listeners, without going into the detail, I'm not sure if they would, I'm sure Philip would know what I'm referring to, using God to re-establish sort of, you know, having doubted everything. I suppose I could just maybe go into a little detail. But I don't want to turn off any sort of listeners who says, you know. But basically, correct me if I'm wrong, but Descartes then tries to, having dismantled everything that we know, through his systematic doubts, rebuilds the world and uses God as a way out. Is would that be an adequate description, you say?
Yeah, I think Descartes has many problems. Well, I admire his questions that he poses.
Yeah.
But in the end, he doesn't really deliver the answers to the questions he poses very well, I think.
Yeah,
I admire, because he was the first person ever to establish those questions and ask those questions, am I thinking, am I not? And like he was saying, he's the father of modern philosophy. This set off a whole load of chain of different philosophers and different ideas, and really, you know, created a resurgence of modern philosophy in the 16th century? Well, you can edit that out if it's wrong. 16th century.
17th century. Is
it? Sorry. 17th century then.
Yeah.
So that's what he did. He started these questions in the mind. Now I think there's problems with him for starting saying as he is thinking, because it could be a collection of thoughts. Yeah. And I don't like the way he sort of jumps to God just because he can have a perfect idea.
Yeah.
I think that's a rather weak response, as you probably said.
Yeah.
As you said. So what I do admire is the fact that he put out these questions and started off philosophy once again. It sort of died down, and then he sort of resurgent. He was the father of modern philosophy. He asked questions that mattered.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing, really. He started this and started thinking about them.
Well, I can tell you how it's affected my life. When I started reading into Descartes, I kind of questioned my own religion. If I were to go down the whole Matrix route and, you know, imagine I am being deceived by this evil demon. And therefore, if I exist and I don't know if I'm a physical brain, if I'm, you know, if I have this physical shape, but I must have a creator. Something must have created me. You know, that's as much as I can be sure. But as far as, you know, the Virgin Mary, Jesus Christ, and, you know, all the miracles that I'm a believer myself, or I used to be, I read several times the Old and the New Testament, and there were just so many things in it that were, you know, really unbelievable. You know, fair enough, it's the Bible, so you just go along with it as you're told to as a kid. With science and through the philosophy of Descartes, when I start to question everything, and if I can only be sure of my existence, then I'm happy to accept and with faith believe that there is a creator for that, and, you know, that's what I believe is my God. And we discussed it the other day that pantheism, you'd mentioned it to me, where it's, you know, I'm not agnostic, I do believe in God, but it's more the idea that the universe and everything within it is all connected, and all of it is divine, and all of that is God.
Yeah. Sort of like Hinduism then, really, pantheists, aren't they?
I don't know. What was that?
Hinduism. But I think I mean, I don't know much about the Hindu faith, but do they believe in that many deities, or... Is that right?
Well, I think they believe in one deity, don't they? The Brahman.
Okay.
Brahman, I think. Okay. Brahma. And say he's all part of the whole world.
Okay.
Like pantheism, basically. They say the whole world is God.
Okay.
And then there's different sort of versions of those deities.
Mm. The idea of a... Because I think what G said is the idea of a personal God. Have you stopped believing in a personal God that answers your prayers? Or?
Well, I used to pray, funnily enough, I used to pray every night, and then I had a routine. I prayed like to Jesus and Mary, and then God. You know, it sounds kind of stupid now thinking back on it that you would separate it out like that. But now when I say a prayer, it's either I pray to my mum or to God, but I'm sad to say it, but, you know, Mary and Jesus, I don't pray to them because I don't have that same belief. And, you know, it seems like the first 10 minutes of Zeitgeist, if anyone hasn't seen it, you know, I'd recommend you to watch it, because it's a very powerful introduction, and they explain a story that reoccurs throughout history, and it's found in, you know, in Greek mythology, it's found in Egyptian history, about a son of God being born of a virgin mother, and there are several variations, but effectively dies and 3 days later will rise again, was a carpenter, was visited by the king. So all the common things that you'd recognize from the nativity and the life of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear this story repeated, so the guy that narrates the introduction, you know, goes through these different generations of history where this same story, like, so he says, this period, born of a Virgin Mary, died 3 days later, rose again.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, you know, Horus, the sun god, born of a Virgin Mary, died 3 days later, rose again. And you get to 2000 approximately years ago, you know, Jesus of Nazareth, born of a Virgin Mary, died 3 days later, you know, 3 days later, rose again. So that just played with my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Just thought, you know, wow, it just seems like this is this pattern that's just repeated itself.
Mm.
And it's, you know, at every point when that story existed, it's had a huge following, you know, and everyone buys into it.
Mm.
And so that really put me off my religion in the sense that I'd always seen it. And when I went to Sunday school, they would teach me all these stories about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And about God, and it's almost like the Disney version of it, you know. It's They don't talk about all the madness of the revelations, last book of the New Testament, when these big monsters come out of the sea with heads of goats and stuff, and it's really trippy, you know, to hear all that. But the Descartes, I think, therefore I exist. So whatever created this existence that I am, mm-hmm. I believe that to be my God. Mm-hmm. And everything else that does exist, therefore, mm-hmm. is all divine. And that, for me, that's my religion. And I'm happy with that. You know, I mean, if that's what I've arrived at, then, you know, at least I do have a faith in something.
Yeah.
I think you should be careful when you watch these zeitgeist films and stuff to really check up the facts. As I sort of know that Horus, I think, was born from Isis, not a virgin. But I think there's a lot of these myths out there, but I don't want to really go into that area. But I'd like
to get that. Have you heard of the Dead Sea Scrolls?
Yeah, I have.
So that's the oldest version of the Bible there is, and it was recently found, you know, in the last couple hundred years. But they're still in the process of translating it.
Okay.
And this is the original version of the Bible, and I can't remember if it's Aramaic or what it's written in, but it's a system where the letters were also written the same way as numbers.
Mm.
So it's very, very difficult to kind of translate everything in the right meaning.
Mm.
And this still works. So, you know, and we're reading from the James Bible, whatever the most modern version of the Bible is. And I don't know, it just seems too far-fetched that, you know, you've played the game Chinese Whispers, or what about thousands and thousands of years of work, you know, from mouth to mouth, and then, you know, putting it down and then translated, and then so many different things being added to it. It makes it really hard for me to, it's a hard pill for me to swallow based on, you know, what I know now.
And so were you raised Philip, a Christian? Have you stayed true to your faith throughout your life, or did you convert? Or
yeah, I think I sort of was raised a Christian, but I really sort of, in the recent years, started looking into the philosophy behind it,
mm-hmm.
and I have yet really to be convinced by other arguments.
Okay.
I don't really want to go into all the arguments really of that and that now.
Yeah,
I'd rather keep it on the subject of Descartes and
secular
philosophy. I sort of was convinced really of to stay there, and I have looked at arguments and I have heard counter-criticisms.
Yeah.
Really, I'm quite into that as well, so I know sort of arguments for and against.
Yeah.
But on total philosophy, I mean, when my friend started it, who's also a Christian,
mm-hmm.
we sort of agreed not to change it into a apologetics channel or a theology channel.
Yeah.
And try and keep, you know, just pure philosophy with arguments and criticisms.
Yeah.
Really. I think a lot of times, you know, the atheist you hear, oh no, it's two religious guys making a philosophy channel, we're going to shove their views down our throat. And
so you've kept it. Yeah, yeah.
He's going to keep it sort of pure philosophy, really.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of already channels out there that do theology and stuff. So
yeah, and if they want to watch the debates, there's so much out there, isn't there, already? So and I think that's quite interesting viewing, you know. But I think that's a very good idea. I think spot on, because you don't want to put people off, exactly as you said, thinking, okay, so apologetics and putting on, you know, the philosophy. You've kept it as a textbook would, but just bringing it alive.
Yeah, exactly. I think you put it in good words there. Mm. It's definitely going to be I look at the textbooks, really.
Mm.
This is how I write my scripts, really. I sort of look at the textbook, take notes, and sort of get it summed down as small as I can.
Mm.
I use that to expand it into a script and write it into a script. So a lot of times people come to me and say, oh, it's just what the textbook said, and I couldn't understand it, and now I can.
Yeah,
I sort of sum it up for them and put it in a simple with diagrams and illustrations.
Well, as a teacher, I'll tell you, if you show your teachers, I don't think, I mean, they will be very, because I don't, I mean, teachers would find it difficult to create something like that. What you've done, being a teacher myself, and I've done, I've put out some maths videos. I've only had 1,000 hits combined of my 36 videos. I've had all together, and I'm quite proud of my 1,000. You've had 35,000 hits, so you're doing better than a teacher. And I don't think your teachers could do any better. You've done a brilliant job.
Thank you.
Very well done. Seriously, I was so impressed. So impressed.
You can put a link in the description to your mass video as well.
Yeah, I mean, well, they've got. Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest, my one, because there's as I said, there's someone who's got 31,000 subscribers and exam solutions, and I think he's done a brilliant job. I wouldn't even. My ones are just sort of tailor made for my students' stuff that he hasn't got up there, but I don't think I could do any better. And yeah, you know, looking at education today, and sorry to change a little bit, but it's related to what you guys are doing, and I suppose what I'm doing as well. The role of technology, and you guys have seen, you can appreciate how young people, say your peers studying philosophy and trying to revise and trying to get the key concepts across, the power of, and now the ability to make these videos. Because we're men in our 30s, and at the time we didn't have this, did we? We didn't have what you guys are producing. I think you're doing a great service to, again, praise, but you know, well-deserved praise, but a great service to, and as you said, on the internet, there's not much of what you're doing. It's quite unique. A great service to students.
Yeah, and I just wanted to touch on that because I noticed that in the description, and you mentioned that it is for students that are studying philosophy. And, you know, just as the original Facebook was just for the university,
mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if it's a collection of universities, but I really feel that where you're going to get the viral kind of response is, you know, not for students, but just for people in general, that, you know, someone throws up a really cool video on Facebook, and it, you know, it has a, you know, one of the philosophies explained in the style that you produce, you know, that I think it's more for people that don't know or wouldn't be, you know, inclined. I think that there's a really big
definitely
market. I think that's more so than what you're saying for the students. So
both ways. I mean, because the guy Exam Solutions, who's doing the maths videos, because, well, maths is quite universal. But so then is Western philosophy, I suppose. You know, if you're studying philosophy, say in the States, you know, any English speaking country would come across the same names. So the general audience, is that right, yeah. G, what you're referring to, making it more sort of, rather than specific to A-level students. But, I mean, you haven't sort of mentioned A-level, have you? You've just made it is that right, just a general introduction to philosophy?
Mm-hmm. So, but I guess the whole business mindset behind it. Because once you start to get 30, I mean, you know, you get 35,000 hits.
Continue. Yeah.
All that says to me is potential.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Definitely,
and so there is a demand out there, but I would certainly, you know, certainly my listeners, and also, you know, me as a young, as a, you know, back in the day, or even now, hearing these videos, and, you know, there's always something to learn, and it just so could happen that it's one of those, you know, those moments where it's a paradigm shift, like with the Descartes thing, you know, once I really understood it, you know, everyone gets those moments, whether it's religion or philosophy, but. And you can get it multiple times, you know, every time you're introduced to a new philosopher, sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't, but sometimes it really resonates. It strikes so hard that you're like, you know, you're almost in shock. And, you know, if you can provide it in this video format.
Oh, brilliant. And so do you intend on, when you have the time, obviously not during this exam period, but say when you go to university, do you intend on continuing this channel?
Yeah, definitely. It's been a great success, and the feedback we've had has been great on the channel, and it's really encouraging.
Oh, yeah.
Has spurred us on to go more.
Yeah.
I have a lot planned over the summer, and I'm going to release as many videos as I can in a
brilliant,
short
brilliant.
Period of time in good quality, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
not rushed to come. So I hope to, once I'm sort of finishing on the 20th of June, I think, is my last exam, and then I'm off on holiday for a week. So when I get time, I'll try and get a video out to keep the subscribers waiting too long. But I'm definitely planning. Hopefully when I go to university, I will be able to expand and maybe meet other people doing philosophy who can help as well. I might plan on trying to befriend someone who may be able to help with the videos, chip in maybe.
Yeah. Mm. And I think the vision, I mean, the ideas, you know, you've got the goods there. I think, you know, as sort of, I suppose, not as, say, filmmakers, but I don't know, you know, short video clip makers or YouTube publishers or what you want to call it. But there is something there. There is something in how you guys have put it together that obviously works. And I think that, I mean, I'm a teacher myself, so I think I can actually, I'm allowed to say this, but I think it's actually better than, you know, say I were to stand up in front of a class and try to present an idea. Mm-hmm. I think some of the videos would make it so much clearer. Even the maths videos, you know, myself and some of the ideas that this guy on YouTube I keep mentioning that he's done, and I'm thinking I can't explain it any better. Mm-hmm. So I'm now going to, rather than do sort of chalk and talk and explain, you know, how to solve this or that equation, the students can now go home and watch it, and we can now explore maybe the more difficult concepts in the classroom.
Well, how many times have we spoken to each other and I would say to you, I'll check out this video.
Yeah.
Because I can't say it any better.
No, exactly.
I can't say, so, you know, in a classroom environment, why would you not?
Yeah, and philosophy. I mean, if you guys show... And why is it that you haven't shown your teachers, I'm curious?
No, like I said, Mike, I think, presenter two, or Tom, I think he's called, showed his teacher.
Yeah.
But my teacher's very crazy. He's someone who goes around claiming how he hates the police and wants him to burn and stuff. So he's a very crazy type.
Okay.
So I'm sort of not sure how he would like it.
Okay, but your classmates, have they all seen it?
My friends have seen it. Yeah, I've got a few friends who've seen it and they like it.
Oh, I think, you know, just as a revision and things like that.
But on the UCAS, I mean, you know, applying for universities as well, I mean, that must...
Did you mention any of this?
Yes, I did. I put... the YouTube link into the description.
Yeah.
Someone who's helping me said it's probably going to be the only personal statement that has a YouTube link in it. It's going to be so unique.
Oh, fantastic. Brilliant. Yeah.
I got the offer, so I was happy. Oh,
brilliant.
So what's the next projects then? Who are you going to focus on next?
I don't know. We got a lot of philosophers. Plato's one of them coming up. I'm going to do that. And I might redo some of the videos that I'm not too pleased on. Might just remaster them a bit if I have time.
Mm.
Yeah. Do that. But I agree with you when you say that these videos are good at explaining, as you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. I mean, I found a philosophy video today, actually, on the three-man paradox, or three-man problem to Plato's theory of the forms. Mm-hmm. You could probably search that. It's like three-man... it's like three-man problem, Plato forms a cycle on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And it explained it so easily.
Mm-hmm.
So much better when you're searching these sites or philosophy channels or, sorry, philosophy articles and all the other stuff. You can get a textbook. It's pages and pages of information, really, which you can read and just say, what, don't understand it, go back and back.
Mm-hmm.
When you've got a video that gets the core concepts,
mm-hmm.
you go, well, I get that. Mm. And once you get those core concepts, and then you can go back to the textbook, read it again, and say, I understand this.
Yep.
And then you can understand the more complex bits that textbook adds.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because once you get that core concept, like I said right at the beginning of this video, you can then build upon with other smaller philosophical ideas and grow upon that. And that's really the mission of Total Philosophy, to get philosophy out to people, simply.
And I think you made a good point there that, you know, this... The whole point of your videos is just to whet the appetite.
Yeah, and sort of,
build
the foundation.
Yeah, that's how you know you'll be successful. Yeah, if they get it and they then have this their own desire to go and pursue it. You know, and like you said, you know, once you get I get that. Mm. Let me go pick up the book, and then everything else makes
sense.
Becomes
clearer. Yeah. Funny you mentioned that. I saw. I don't know if you've seen the one on the cave, Plato's cave.
The allegory of the cave.
And they did like what did they use?
Clay,
that's the one, yeah. You've seen that one?
Yes.
Brilliant. Don't you think that was brilliant?
That one when doing my revision.
Oh, that was such a... Don't you think that was so brilliant? Again, you know, just to say, to bring that alive, you know, visually. Yeah. Compare that to a boring say, yeah. You know, if you're as a student, I mean, hey, if you're interested, it's not boring, but I'm saying, students who think, oh, textbook, got to revise, and, you know.
But usual. I think it's worth, you know, summarising what that is, you know, very quickly. Imagine a people in a cave where what they're seeing is an imitation of real life. Mm-hmm. You know, the real objects are being shown as shadows on a wall or a screen. So actually, I'm not going to butcher the story and say it too much, but effectively, you know, imagine the scenario where one person is removed from the cave and they actually visit, you know, they're introduced to the real world where they see everything in color, in taste, in high definition. And then they are thrown back into the world of the cave, where upon return, their eyes don't see as well now in the dark.
Yeah.
And then everyone else sees this person return that now has lost the ability to see as clearly in there. And, you know, so it's almost when you open your eyes, whether it's mindfulness or through, you know, when you understand the matrix, you know, there is a clear difference between those that don't kind of see it and those that do.
Yeah, there are good videos in that cave. Actually, it's good when people make philosophy videos, which surprised me, actually. I mean, a long time ago, I mean, quite a few years ago on YouTube, you can see that there were quite a few philosophical channels around.
Yeah.
There was Philosophy File, which is good, and I think College Binary did a few videos, although they wouldn't be appropriate for classrooms, since they contained quite a bit of swearing, so that's something you'd probably use to revise at home. But there's other videos as well, and they've all seemed to stop making them for a period of time, which really surprised me, because they were such good and helpful, and there was like a series being released, and suddenly they just all stopped. So that kind of surprised me, really. It's another reason why I started up Total Philosophy, since I found those videos so helpful, and since they weren't being made anymore, I said, oh, there's a gap in the market, I'll go and take that, really, and start helping people as well.
Would you call yourself a philosopher?
Well, I'd like to think myself as a philosopher, but I'm not sure I'd qualify as one if I went and did a philosophy test or something.
Yeah, it almost sounds kind of, you know, a bit snobbish if you say yes, yeah. I'm a philosopher, because you're an idiot, you're not a philosopher. You know, so
I think you have to write your own works, really, to be truly a philosopher.
Well, let's break it down. You know, well, what would you define as the minimum requirement to be a philosopher?
Someone who's written his own works, I suppose. As you said, I think that
But if the word means the love of wisdom, you know, I mean, am I not a philosopher by us having these conversations over and over again?
Sort of engaging in philosophical debate and sort of questioning the ideas of philosophy, yes, but you know,
by trade, philosopher by trade.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So sort of armchair philosophers or just, you know, someone with interest. And it's like, you know, you can engage in mathematics and do mathematics. We all, you know, but, you know, would I regard myself as a mathematician? I haven't come up with any theorems. You know, certainly I'm not an academic professional mathematician. But yet, you know, I have an appreciation for mathematics. And, mm-hmm. and so, you know, within the limits of my ability.
Yeah. I guess the reason why I ask, you know, are we philosophers? Because I believe maybe not by trade, but certainly by, you know, if that's what consumes most of my thoughts and, you know, how I think.
I suppose, you know, sort of, you know, one can say, you know, we engage in, say, you know, philosophical thinking or considering the writings of the philosophers. But yeah, as you said, a philosopher by trade, or any, I suppose, original thoughts. I haven't. I mean, just wrestling with the questions that they've raised and trying to understand them is all I've done, and sort of my own.
But isn't that not for?
Understanding
what the real questions are. Bertrand Russell said, "Isn't that what philosophy is?"
But I think because then everyone's a philosopher in a sense. So to really be, or rather, you know, to be considered, you know, in the sense of a Descartes or one of the great philosophers, you had to have had some sort of original thinking, you know. So, I mean, in the sense, as I said, am I a mathematician? I haven't produced any original theorems.
Okay, well, if I said... So...
Yeah, I like to chip in, really. In a vague sense, we could all be philosophers. And anyone who asks the question, really, is a philosopher. really. And those who search.
But there's not. But not everyone asks the question. That's a good point you're raising. It. Not everyone asks the question.
Some people are dissatisfied with how they are and don't bother asking and searching. Mm. Those who ask and say, "I'm going to search for the answers. I'm going to search for the truth,"
mm-hmm.
which is an important thing in life, which I think everyone should do.
Agreed.
Everyone should ask these questions, mm-hmm. and those who do it could really be called philosophers, really. Because mm-hmm. When you go back to Descartes and stuff, I'm sure their job wasn't philosopher. I'm sure they had a fill in the form. They wouldn't write philosopher.
Mm.
And I'm sure Descartes would have been a mathematician and not sure his profession was before you could look it up on Wikipedia.
He was a loner, actually. He wasn't actually affiliated with any academic institute. I think he made a bit of money sort of through an inheritance and just lived in isolation for years. And
observing, yeah.
And I think he corresponded with Marcin. I'm not sure if I'm saying the name correctly, but and that's how he got in touch with, the great thinkers of the time. But he wasn't, an academic philosopher, if you like. He wasn't. You're right. Because
we asked the same questions that he asked, but he just came up with a really great answer.
But I think you have to also. I think I read this in Nigel Warburton's. Certainly, I'm not a great writer. So, you know, to be a great philosopher, you have to also be a good writer. He says, but then Immanuel Kant apparently wasn't a great writer, which makes his philosophy quite difficult to read. Apparently,
yeah.
So I don't know. I
mean, it's not in writing, but like today with the medium of video, you can do a great video and you can be a philosopher.
Yeah,
so you can do a pod. Like I'm saying, maybe I'm not writing it down, but what if I'm doing it on a podcast?
Yeah, but I mean,
or what if Philip's doing it in a video? You know,
and I suppose we're talking about sort of.
We haven't written it down, but you know, we've got our own medium. So does that equate?
I mean, setting the bar. You know, if we look at the general population who, you know, who aren't professional, but an appreciation. So I can engage in an appreciation for the questions, the eternal questions that philosophy asks. I can appreciate the beauty of mathematics and, you know, its precise reasoning without having contributed. So I think there is pleasure to be gained in philosophy and in whatever you choose, even if you are not, you know, because we aren't all born with the minds of these men who've who've made a difference to humanity in some ways. You know, I certainly don't have that gift, and it's not false modesty. I'm just being realistic that I don't possess that kind of mind, but that's okay, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the limits prescribed by nature, you know. So I'm quite happy with the brain, the mind that mm-hmm. I have, and what little contribution I have to society, but I'm happy to just, with limits of my ability, appreciate what I can. I think there's a lot of beauty to be discovered in these.
And I think the important message, I guess, that we need to pervade, that we've had this conversation now over an hour, and you know, we're enjoying it because it's talking about something that stimulates us and makes us happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you take away anything from today, is that, you know, it's not only important philosophy, you know, just how you think and how you view life, but it helps you to be happy. And I think, you know, a lot of people, whatever profession that you're in and what you're doing, you know, that seeking happiness and contentment is something that everyone says it's a mutual goal that we all share.
Mm.
Now, understanding the basics of philosophy and having that desire that should inspire
mm-hmm.
to go seek out more and to learn more and to not only learn, but apply it in your lives. Because the minute you start applying it, you start to see the benefits of it, and it's quite powerful, and it's that's why we refer back to it time after time.
To the listeners, I think what you said about making you happy, back to what I said about Jules Evans, his video on his TED talk on how philosophy saved my life, you know, mm-hmm. helping him climb out of depression, you know, that he was a serious state of sadness. And to climb out of that through reading philosophy. So that's what it can do, you know. And yeah, agreed.
Yeah. And I think it's a good note to kind of end the podcast, you know.
Yeah,
on that positive upbeat note. If people wanted to give you a little shout out or to reach out.
That'd be Total Philosophy on Twitter.
Yeah.
We tweet a lot more often than we Facebook post.
Mm-hmm.
Since it's a bit easier, really, I find. And sometimes I just copy the tweets across to the Facebook post. But yeah, follow us on Twitter, definitely. That'd be, what is it, at Total Philosophy.
Yep. And on Facebook, it's. I mean, I think no one else has that name. So, you know,
yeah,
on Facebook.
Total Philosophy. It'd be facebook.com/Total Philosophy.
Check out the Descartes one. I mean, it really is interesting, and it's, you know, it really struck a chord with me. You know, it got Philip on the podcast with us, and, you know, I hope, you know, you've taken away something from today, because, you know, just even talking about it again and regurgitating some and just going through the motions in your mind about, you know, Descartes, it's a healthy exercise to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like retraining that muscle.
Yeah. And I suppose, you know, as a final word on the value of philosophy, that quote that we always say, you know, the unexamined life is not worth living. And I think, now, obviously, Philip and we're all here, the converted, but for those who would rather not use their minds and just wander around lost, I think it's worth giving some attention to. And especially now, you see, with again, back to, it's actually made it so much easier now in the 21st century to educate, just to improve your own thinking, to help educate yourself. You know, with the podcasts, with YouTube, with the stuff that Philip's doing, I think now, more than any time in history, people can actually, easier than ever, be able to be more philosophical.
There's no excuses now.
There's no excuses. And I think there is a lot of satisfaction. You know, back to what Bertrand Russell said about, you know, sort of food for the mind, if you like. You know, you something for the mind, you know, because even if we have all the food and all the external goods.
Like we're saying, most people are just eating McDonald's for the brain every day. Do you
McDonald's
know what I mean?
For the brain, so you know, give yourself something.
A Descartes is like a, you know, one of those protein shakes. You know, it just throws your brain with all these nutrients. You know,
so just for your average, you know, general person who doesn't want to go too deep, but I think there's something to be found for everyone, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think eating McDonald's isn't the worst thing for a philosopher. I'm sure David Hume would have definitely liked to have that by looking at his size.
All right, well, thank you very much again, Phil, Philip, and on that note.
It's been a great pleasure. Really, really, really good to have you.
It's been a pleasure as well, coming, talking to you guys.
Yeah. And really inspirational. I mean, it's, you know, you're a few years younger than us, but it's actually very inspirational to see, you know, the stuff that you guys are producing, and I think what good it will do for society. I know it sounds like a grand, but why not? You know, what you guys are doing is helping others access this information, you know, contributing in a small way, or, you know, perhaps even larger scale in the future, and already 35,000 hits have benefited.
I will throw up that Descartes video that you guys made, and I'll put it on my on the videos tab on my website. And then you can turn it up.
Cheers.
Alright. We'll be in touch. Thank you very much. Alright. Take care. Good night.
Some of the smartest dummies can't read the language of Egyptian mummies on a flag or a moon, and can't find food for the starving tummies. Pay no mind to the youths, cause it's not like the future depends on it. Or say the animals in the zoo, cause the chimpanzee them a make big money. This is how the media pillages, on TV the picture is savages and villages, and the scientists still can't explain the pyramids. Evangelists making a living on the videos of ribs of the little kids, stereotyping the image of the images, and this is what the image is. You buy a khaki pants and all of a sudden you are say a Indiana Jones, and I thief all the gold and thief all the scrolls and even the bird bones. Some of the worst paparazzi I've ever seen and ever known, with the worst on this place that the world can see, and that's all that will ever show. So the ones in the west will never move east and feel like it'd be at home. Get tricked by the beast, but the way them a go flee when the monster is fully grown. Salamonic lineage where them still can't defeat and them coulda never clone. My spiritual DNA that prints in my soul and I will forever own, Lord. Are we born knowing all? We growing wiser? Are we just growing tall? Can you read thoughts? Can you read palms? Can you predict the future? Can you see storms coming? The earth was flat, if you went too far you would fall off. Now the earth is round, if the shape change again, everybody would have start love. The average man can't prove up most of the things that he chooses to speak of. And still run research and find out the root of the truth that you seek of. Scholars teach in universities and claim that they're smart and cunning. Tell them find a cure when we sneeze and that's when their nose start running. And the rich get stitched up when we get cut. Wanna heal them broken bones in the bush with a wet mud. Can you re-science? Can you re-stars? Can you make peace? Can you fight war? Can you milk cows even though you drive cars? Can you survive against all odds now? Bible, who wrote the Quran? And was it a lightning storm that gave birth to the earth and then dinosaurs were born? Who made up words? Who made up numbers? And what kind of spell is mankind under? Everything on the planet we preserve and can it. Microwave it and try it, no matter what, we'll survive it. What's you? What's man? What's human? Anything along the land we consuming, eating, deleting, ruin. Trying to get paper, what? Gotta have land, gotta have acres, so I can sit back like Jack Nicholson, watch play the game like the Lakers, in a world full of 52 fakers, gypsy seances, mystical prayers, you superstitious, throw salt over your shoulders, make a wish for the day, cuz, like somebody got a doll of me, sticking needles in my artery, but I can't feel it, sometimes it's like part of me, but I got a real big spirit, a fearless, don't you try to grab hold of my soul. It's like a military soldier since 7 years old. I held real dead bodies in my arms, felt their body turn cold. Oh, why are we born in the first place if this is how we gotta go? Damn. Savali. Patience. Yeah.